You're listening to episode 12-1 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desbigalow, and with me tonight is the guy who already camped out for Pacific Rim. I'm talking about Eric Blue Swim.
Hey, that's me.
Eric, did you see the trailer?
No, actually, I haven't checked it out yet.
It's got a big Godzilla-like boss who comes from the middle of the Earth, and I figured you would jizz your pants over it.
Well, I've already been jizzing my pants over the official announcement of Earth Defense Force 2025 coming out next year. It's official for the U.S., and I cannot wait.
Digital only, though.
Well, actually, that's the PSP, or it's PS Vita.
Vita version, yes.
Yeah, apparently that's the retail release got canned, and instead it's looking like it's going to be digital distribution in Europe, so it's probably going to be the same over here. And
sure. And with us tonight is the only person in the world who camped out for a Wonder Book. I'm talking about Jeremy Lawman Lamont.
Guten Abend.
Hashtag anal bleeding.
Wow. not with us tonight on the IR are Sean Nola Kirkland, who got called out to do a demo, and also Sage Simmerage Morris Green, who has both Hanukkah and the family. And also, she's writing a brief tonight, so she's out. But she
none
promised...
of those are acceptable reasons.
Yes, she promised to be back next episode, and she would not miss ever again.
Uh-oh.
So let's talk about impressions. I bought something. Blue, you know.
Is it something by Nintendo and kind of reminds you of a PS Vita?
You know, I am a sucker for launches. Even though I tell myself I'm going to do the prudent thing and wait for a price drop until all the kinks get worked out, I get in the Kool-Aid line and ask for a big glass to quench my gaming thirst almost every time. So last week I purchased a Wii U from Best Buy, and which is just one of the retailers where it's readily available right now. Strangely enough, my system, when I got it, it seemed to be factory sealed, but when I took the protective wrapping off the gamepad, I was horrified. There was this big scratch across the screen. Yeah. It was like Reggie just took his knife and
forehead.
Or his keys. Yeah, his forehead, and etched in a little symbol. It almost looks like an R. So that's why it was Reggie. I knew it. Luckily the Wii U systems, they're tracked by serial number and not by the actual gamepads. They have a model number, but they don't seem to track the serial. So all I had to do is take the gamepad back to the retail store, and they opened a new box and swapped it out for me, which is really nice of them. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the hardware and the OS. Before I touch on the software. So the build quality of the system, I was generally pleased with. There are a few areas of improvement. The actual console, it feels sturdy, and I experienced none of the disc reading problems that Sean brought up the last episode or two, so no problems there. Now, coming from the Wii's super quiet little micro fan, the Wii U's fan is a little louder. It's much closer to its generational peers, the PS3 Slim, I'd say, and the Xbox 360 Slim consoles. And my main problem with the system is apparently a lack of shielding. Right now, my console, the Wii U, sits about 2 feet away from just a 2.1 sound system, which gives off a steady hum. And none of my other, you know, consoles or portables do that, which is really weird. And if I move it away, you know, it's definitely the Wii U that's doing that. So a little bit more shielding in Wii U 2.0, guys. Big firmware update that everybody complained about, that was pretty much a non-issue for me. It was smart enough to skip it the first time I sat down to play. And then when I was ready to upgrade, it took maybe an hour. And so, you know, I got all the play out of my system there. Even with the remarkably shitty download rate I get in the office here, you know, it wasn't bad at all. One of the things I heard was this firmware update was supposed to reduce load times. And honestly, I haven't noticed a thing. And I'm not sure if people are talking about the load times of the games or the length of time it takes when navigating the Wii U menu system, which is something I need to talk about. At its heart, the Wii U OS is really awful. If you want to, say, check on the progress of a download, something like in the PS Vita, you just tap on the corner, and there it is. you know, and like the PS3 and 360, the Wii U is capable of background downloads. So what you have to do is tap on the wrench for the settings, and you wait up to a good 20 seconds. And I know that the gamepad is just this dumb terminal that's only receiving a signal, but I want to know what the hell the system's doing and why it was engineered that you really have to wait so long. It's really perplexing.
I watched a video of a woman in Japan, I guess just like a mommy blogger or someone who was that you had the. Have you seen this video?
No.
And the woman like she like touches like YouTube or something. I don't know. Yes. Something, and she just sits there and talks, and we just wait and wait, and it's like a minute and a half before it actually loads up the thing. And at the end, she's making these like really frustrated sounds, like she can't like get it to do anything. Finally, it loads, but it's pretty.
Yeah, I tried doing the. Tried hitting the YouTube icon, and it had to download an update for YouTube. I haven't tried it since, you know, because my computer, amazingly enough, gets YouTube, you know, pretty easy without having to update all the time. But I haven't experienced anything on the area of a minute and a half, but it's definitely long. The one thing I also wanted to talk about is about the hardware, is the uprising of Wii games. I tried a few favorites, Tatsunoko. Geometry Wars Galaxies, Super Mario Galaxy. I was really impressed with the results. Overall, the edges, they were a little artifacty. That's a word that, you know, you can see a little bit of artifacting there. But the overall visual appearance was definitely better. Also, one thing I need to explore further, but I noticed no slowdown. And even in Galaxies, which is pretty amazing, there's some brief instances of slowdown when you get like 100 particles exploding at once. But I didn't see that in about the half hour, 45 minutes I played with it. And every once in a while when you are, you know, doing some kind of emulation or something like that, you'll get a little bit more slowdown. I know that the PS3, you know, the early ones that had the PS2, even hardware emulators would slow down every once in a while. So the bad with the Wii emulation, you can't play your old virtual console games on the gamepad. I understand Wii games, you know, making that concession, but the older games that don't use any kind of motion control, that seems puzzling to me. So instead, the gamepad just goes black, which is really, to me, missing out on a great opportunity. The big success, and which is, you know, Nintendo's kind of surprise, is the Miiverse. And which I always want to call Weverse because it's kind of a, you know, cool pun. But this is what thanks, Jeremy, for courtesy laugh there. Now, this is what allows people to communicate sans friends codes. In Nintendo Land, it's populated with the Mii avatars, and they move around kind of convincingly. There's something about the way they look around that could potentially fool people into thinking they're actually being controlled in real time, the way the characters kind of look at you and stop. In essence, Miiverse is little more than a bulletin board, but with a really cool, great interface. You can post questions. You can even, you know, post screenshots if you're stuck. You can put, you know, statements. You can draw pictures. And man, I'm really surprised there's so many great artists out there. And people respond. They can respond. They can like your post. And what sets it apart is that, you know, unlike a number of other games, if you're stuck at a certain level, you can just post a question and people will issue up a response fairly quickly. And you can totally circumvent, you know, internet forums and message boards. It's really cool. You know, you're stuck and there's help right there. Truly ingenious. In the hub world of Super Mario Brothers U, God, that's a mouthful. I saw people asking questions and kind of making comments, and all very polite. I mean, eerily polite. The Nintendo community is just this epitome of courtesy, which is so nice and so refreshing. It's wonderful. And so far, even though, you know, it has that capability, I haven't seen a single genitalia there in the Miiverse, which is pretty amazing and almost tempting to see what would happen there. I know that there's moderators, but they must be, you know, really active because.
So that's the thing I wanted to ask about, because you said everybody's being very nice and there's interaction going on, but I have heard nothing except the degree to which this community is extremely heavily and quickly moderated. I've heard that, and I'm trying to figure out, and I don't know if you've had any experience with where they draw the lines on this stuff.
Because I felt so much like I need to abide by that. Like, here's this community where everybody's, I didn't even want to push the threshold. Does that make sense?
So you didn't want to crash Pleasantville or anything? And
no grievers there.
Didn't want to turn that world into color?
No.
Yeah.
I've heard that even something as simple as like drawing Samus's arm cannon can get like some sort of penis recognition censorship or something to that effect.
Really? Are you drawing it just to look like a arm cannon or something else? Vaguely.
That wasn't actually me, though.
Oh, okay.
I've heard that breaks down, though, because the detection software will only detect a single penis.
Uh-oh.
So if you have a flash of swords, something else is going on.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, I didn't even try. You know, you guys should get a Wii U just to push the limits and test these things, which I don't know what to do. I just don't. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Wii U update 2.0. Penis orgy detection.
Right. I drew a printy, though.
Oh, I saw that. It was a very good printy.
Thanks.
It was really good.
You know, it's actually awful compared to most of the artwork. Like, everybody on there has these really amazing drawings, and they make me feel like I'm a sixth grader. Anyway, let me talk about software.
I have one more question, though, about, like, so I've heard that you can't put any identifying information, or they block you, right?
I didn't try, nor did I see any information. I did put a, I spammed and put tech gaming on there.
And they didn't block you?
No, they did not block.
Because I've heard websites get blocked, Twitter handles get blocked. If you put anything on there about a website, it gets blocked.
I just wrote tech.
Jeez.
I've heard that. And I've also heard, and maybe I don't know if you can corroborate this, but I've heard that if you try to add friends, like, you just can't really figure out who's who on there.
Yeah, that part was, I admit, a little bit tricky there. Walking up and wanting to friend someone was kind of a difficult process.
So walking up, so is it like you or me, Plaza?
Yeah, it's very much like that. You tap on the person, and then it kind of brings up, and that's when you can like certain comments and things like that. And I was trying to, you can like comments, you can't directly interact with them. I think you can respond, you can reply, but as far as connecting, like a friend code, I didn't see that option. But I did see other people had sent me, people I interacted with in-game, and I was able to send them a friend code. And that was later. I'm going to talk about Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Ah, okay. By all means, carry on.
Okay. So a little bit on software to foreshadow a reader, listener comment. I deliberately stayed away from a lot of the third-party ports because they are better and cheaper on other systems. So far, I got in for a review and bought a couple games. I got Sonic, as I mentioned, an All-Star Racing Transformed, new Super Mario Bros. U, and, of course, Nintendo Land. So I'll start in order of quality. Start with Nintendo Land, which at first was deemed Nintendo's new Wii Sports, and then all of a sudden the online community said it's nothing like Wii Sports, at least the Nintendo faithful, that was their analysis of it. But in my opinion, it's a lot like Wii Sports. It simultaneously kind of flaunts the abilities of the system while it teaches people the different styles and ways to use the controller. Most people seem to gravitate towards Donkey Kong Crash Course, which is kind of puzzling. To me, it's nothing more than a virtual marble in a wooden maze game, you know, those old games that you'd have. And you move the gamepad left or right to alter a minecart to kind of shift gravity that moves a minecart in a, you know, interesting maze full of girders, jumps, levels, and pulleys that pull from, you know, the old Donkey Kong aesthetic. And if it's one thing that Nintendo Land does well, it is try to evoke some of the music and sounds of some of its older games there. For me, the tilting in some parts, it's overly, you really have to exaggerate. You're turning at more than a 45-degree angle kind of right out the gate. And occasionally the cart gets stuck on parts of the environment, which makes it feel organic, you know, makes it feel very real, but it also prohibits that kind of natural video game mastery where you go in and, you know, the trial and error method there. Captain Falcon's Twister Race is pretty stupid. you hold the gamepad sideways, and that kind of steers your craft. And the instructions tell you to look at the gamepad screen and then back to the TV when you are in a tunnel. But I just played looking at the TV set just fine. You are the only one on the track. There are some obstacles and things to avoid. There's the boost pads and things like that. But the courses are really simple, and there's not much to it. It just feels really basic. Slightly better is the Zelda Battle Quest, where you use the accelerometer and this allows almost like a VR perspective where you're turning the gamepad in space to shoot enemies coming at you. But when you compare it to Link's crossbow training, that was the free game that came with that big $20 piece of plastic, the crossbow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't compare as well. Link's, I know a lot of people do not like it, but it had a ton of variation. It had different levels. It had different methods to score. You could, you know, it had a charge shot. I really liked it. It had different game types. There was this one where you use the nunchuck to kind of walk around. This one has a bit of variation. There's a horde mode and there's a Wiimote kind of sword mode, but it feels simple, just like a lot of the other games on the disc. I would have liked a little bit more variety into maybe reaching out for advanced players. I know, Jeremy, you played a little bit of Nintendo Land, maybe a
lot. Yes.
Does this jive with your feelings at all?
Yeah, you know,
great.
Yeah, I think so. I was sort of expecting a little more from it, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, there is a little bit of, as you get further on in the levels, things get a little bit more strategic, and it's kind of neat to have the bowman in the back with the, you know, the gamepad, and everyone can kind of decide, you know, basically, if I remember correctly, I think you sort of protect the bowman. Isn't the bowman sort of the game-ending thing? If the bowman dies, everybody's done.
Yes.
Yeah, so you sort of have to coordinate with people, and you're playing against the computer. And I was actually just trying to think about how many of the games in the Nintendo Land bunch were sort of cooperative versus competitive, because there's this one, and then I don't know what else is on your list to talk about, but then there's also the Pikmin game. Don't let me steal any of your thunder here, but the Pikmin game is also fully cooperative. So in the Pikmin game, it's sort of the same thing. The person with the gamepad... So whereas the Link's Adventure game is... first person, mm-hmm. and everyone's kind of going, you know, down the forest path or whatever the level is that you're on. In Pikmin, it's sort of top down and very reminiscent of the actual Pikmin game. People with the Wii remotes, up to four people, I believe, can be little individual Pikmin. You get to choose. It's kind of cute. You get to choose your Mii, and you can be like a white Pikmin, or, you know, if you're Reggie, you can feel like a fat purple Pikmin. But the gamepad person gets to be Olimar, and can, you know, the Pikmin are sort of autonomous, and they can go and get little, you know, dew drops, or it's not dew, but it's like that honey stuff that always levels them up in the game. Anyway, so they can level up, and their attacks hurt more, and you know, you try and clear a path, and then eventually you fight boss monsters. And then Olimar can also summon Pikmin and sort of throw them on top, so that if you're fighting a boss or a character that is in the air or has other traits, you know, you can sort of, again, work cooperatively to you know, defeat each level. And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of fun while you're playing it, but it's not that fun to talk about.
Well, yeah, did you play the Yoshi game?
Is that the one where you do the fruits and
line,
things?
Yes.
Yeah, you draw the little path.
I found was interesting. In this one, basically, you have to use the television screen shows a map where there are different fruits. And when you're looking at the gamepad, you draw a line on there. And you are drawing a trail for Yoshi to follow. And there are traps on the ground, and you have to pick up all the fruits. But the fruits don't show up on the gamepad, so you're kind of drawing blind. And every once in a while, you'll have to use environmental objects, and you have a certain number of X's you can place on the map. And it's fun at first, but as I found myself kind of getting bored with it.
You know what it would have been great as? Mm. Because I, you know, I'm kind of in a weird place with Nintendo Land, because I actually really like mini games. I really like mini games. And I really like compilations of mini games.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, like Mario Party. Dude, I will play Mario Party all day long. I'll play Mario Party.
I'm and more part of a WarioWare fan.
Yes. Okay. So WarioWare, absolutely. Micro games, like the whole total other genre, Robert.
Let's put it down the middle, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Okay. Mini micro, but, big difference.
Yeah, definitely. But the thing is that I like to see the different ways. Like, it's almost like a little master's class. I always look at Mario Party like a little master's class in interface. Like, how many different ways, like, mashing a button is different than timing a button is different than doing something else with a button. And I really like the idea of the Yoshi game. Like, it's a really kind of ingenious little game. Like, you have to kind of draw where you think everything is and see if that matches up with what you see on the screen. But...
it doesn't hold well. You're right, it is ingenious, but in the long term... it doesn't hold well. Like, it almost needs variation. Like, you need to be doing something else.
That's right. Or it needs to be like a mini game or part of like a rapid fire WarioWare kind of thing. But on a menu of like 12, I don't know how many games are in Nintendo Land. I never 12. Even counted. 12. Okay. Yes. On a menu of 12, it's kind of rough to put that one thing as one of the menu options.
I totally agree. Back to back, where you keep playing that. And, you know, I played about 20 levels my first time out before I lost my 3 lives. And I totally agree with you. As a variant, it's really fun, but when you keep playing that same, you know, variation, that same mini game, it loses a little bit of its charm. Mm-hmm. So, totally agree with you on that one. But now, Jeremy, what is the where is the division between mini and micro games? What is is it the interaction or the time?
I think it's going to be the time.
Okay, so what is it? 15 seconds.
Well, I think some of the Mario Party games, at least in the earlier games, you can finish in like 10 seconds. But I think like the WarioWare games, it's like it's usually like 3 or 4, maybe 5,
yeah,
something
no
like that.
No more than 5 seconds in a micro game. But I think the difference, too, about a mini game versus a micro game, and I was sort of being facetious earlier, but let's chew on this for a minute. Okay. I think the neat thing about a mini game is that you can take a very simple mechanic, but through the trappings of the interface and the graphics, you know, all the things that you can put into it, I think you can make a very simple interface into something that is more complex. You know, an analog stick and one button can be a mini game depending on what you do with it. A micro game, you know, something like WarioWare, which is basically like the only... Well, there's WarioWare, there's games like Hot Pixel on the PSP, there's Work Time Fun, there's...
And then there's the ones where they use the touchscreen versus...
There's Frobisher Says on the Vita, which is another... I would consider those to be micro games. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of an interesting question, but I would say that... I'm trying to remember Mario Party, but I don't remember any that... 10 seconds, I think, is being a little brief for one of those. I mean, they would at least have tutorials.
I think so, too, because the load times were at least 10 seconds, and you always want the game to be longer than the load time.
When you're playing Mario Party, do you always do the tutorial first? You're like, okay, let's do a practice. Especially if you're playing with young kids and stuff, you're like, yeah, we'll do a practice, and then you kill it, and then you be like, okay, now we'll play the real thing, and you tank.
Do you guys remember 6 with the microphone?
No.
I think the last Mario Party game I played was 5.
Mario Party 6 with the microphone. They actually used the microphone in 6 and 7. 7 was can you remember all of the themes for these? So 7 was the cruise, 6 was the day and night stuff with the sun and the moon person.
Jeez.
5 was
Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah.
I don't remember the themes.
I can't remember either. But I noticed that they haven't really haven't really evolved too much in terms of gameplay. I mean, I do like them, and there's a lot of like memorable mini games, but that is the one limitation, is that ultimately there are only so many ways that you can slice and dice an analog stick and an A button.
Now, those were put out by, they were co-developed by who? Hudson?
That sounds right, yeah.
Now, Hudson's no longer with us?
Hudson Soft in the United States is no longer with us, I believe. Okay. And still exists as a marketing entity. I think they're actually owned by Konami now, actually.
Oh, okay. So there's a possibility for...
Could be wrong about that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they do have... I mean, they have Mario Party 9, I guess, on the Wii was the last one. So,
yep.
And I still have to get both of the Wii ones. I never got 8 or 9, so... But I noticed in the At Gamer magazine, they actually have a coupon. You can get, like, $15 off for Mario Party 9. So.
Yeah, and those always hold their value, so I wouldn't be surprised.
They tend to, and they're hard to find, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, let me talk a little bit about New Super Mario Bros. U.
More Nintendo Land games you wanted to talk about? Because there were a couple that I found really fun.
Tell me.
Luigi's Mansion. Did you play Luigi's Mansion?
No, I did not.
Yes, Luigi's Mansion is great. So, the person with the gamepad is a ghost, and you know, and it's kind of like warehouses or things, and the ghost can only be seen when light touches it, and the light could be in one of the hands of the other players, so the other players go around with a flashlight, or sometimes lightning will flash in the windows and illuminate this ghost. It sort of uses the same mechanic as Pac-Man Versus, which was on the GameCube with the
GBAs,
activity, which I thought, like, for me, that was... I don't want to call it a life-changing moment, but it was amazing, the idea of asynchronous gameplay. And I've probably mentioned it on the show before, but I am probably one of the few people who was...
Wait, why was that asynchronous?
Because one person was Pac-Man and had full view of the entire screen, and the other people were the ghosts, and they had
were playing at the same time.
Well, asynchronous in terms of everybody. I mean, it's asynchronous in
parody. People weren't on the same level.
Okay, all right.
We're drawing straws here.
Yeah. No. You're correct. Asynchronous definitely means not at the same time. But right. Yeah. But anyway, there is a.
I always wanted to play that with three other people. That probably would have been a life changing event had I been able to get three people with their GBAs together.
Well, I got my cord and cable. The thing is, only one person needed for that game. Only one person needed the GBA because everybody else played on the GameCube, and they were the ghosts chasing Pac-Man.
Okay.
And they could see, they could sort of sniff out kind of a trail of where, it was the other way around. No, because they're chasing the Pac-Man, so they could sort of sniff out a trail, and they had limited scope, but the Pac-Man could see the whole board. So the same thing applies to this. And by the way, I could talk for a long time about the GBA connectivity. I loved Crystal Chronicles. I really liked even how they hacked it into Wind Waker. Yeah. In Splinter Cell, I thought it worked really well. So anyway, there's a lot
Animal
of stuff.
Animal Crossing.
Was there?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff, and you could go.
You
to
could
the
have
special...
like a little personal island that Cappy the turtle or whatever would take you to at the pier.
He was really like drunk and depressed, wasn't he? Wasn't he always?
Yeah,
he was like Launchpad.
Kind of, yeah. He was kind of like Pelican sort of thing. Yeah, I remember that, going to the island and there were natives or something you could do there. I don't remember much about it. But anyway, so the same kind of idea as Pac-Man Versus applies here. So there's one ghost, except, he is visible to the entire screen, so everybody shares one screen, but he's only visible when light hits him. So the other players have flashlights, and the flashlights have batteries. So you don't want to just walk around with your flashlight on. You sometimes have to brave the dark a little bit and kind of flicker. There's kind of a flick, 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 flick strategy that you can do to try and, make it last. But the ghost will try and come up behind you and grab you. And if he grabs the player goes unconscious, and they're out of the game, unless someone else comes up and shines their flashlight on that person for what feels like forever. Which then in turn gives the ghost the ability to come around and sneak and get them. So, you know, and then in some of the easier levels, what's the robot's name for the Wii U?
Rob?
Rob the robot?
No. For the Wii U, it's Melinda or...
I think it's Melinda.
Is it Melinda?
Yeah.
Anyway, she sometimes will, you know, be a little flashlight thing of her own, kind of spinning around like the, you know, like the...
She sounds like Cheapy Robo.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. Nintendo and some of their newer mascots, I don't know. But anyway,
yeah, I'm with you on that.
So that's really fun. That's a lot of fun. There's another one that is similar to that, where it's kind of a what is the word? Non-parody. I like your idea of parody, but there's a non-level component to the game. The Animal Crossing game, which is called Sweet Day, Animal Crossing Sweet Day, where
it's like Sugar Rush.
Yeah, kind of, right. And that one is, this one is kind of neat because the person with the gamepad is controlling the dogs from Wild World, and they may have been in City Folk, Copper and Booker, the two.
Jeez, Jeremy.
Police dogs?
I know, yes, police dogs. One of them is the set. Booker, I think, is the sad looking, like. Boston Terrier or whatever he is, and then Copper's he's with it, you know, very military. Anyway, so you play these two characters, and each of the analog sticks on the controller is one of those characters. So you actually have to like look your eyeballs in two different directions, and you're chasing around all of the other characters who are going and stealing candy and getting like big and fat with candy. So the more candy they get, the easier they are to catch. And so you can run around as Booker and Copper. At least I assume that's who they are. I mean, they're dogs in police uniforms. That's got to be who they are. And then the little triggers will do these jumps and things, and will, you try and catch people. And if you catch them a certain number of times, you win. Or if you run out of time or they get all the candy, you lose, which is kind of cool. There's also so those are competitive. There is also a Metroid game, which I think is the one that everybody's seen. The person with the gamepad is a... hunter class, you know, the Samus's little fighter ship
equivalent.
Yeah, exactly. And then everybody else is a Samus, I suppose. And they're little.
She got cloned.
Yeah. It's kind of like the multiplayer in Metroid Prime 2, where it's like, why are we all Samuses? That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So everybody else is on the ground just using their Wii remotes, and a nunchuck is required for that. And that's really, to me, one of the things about Nintendo Land that's really kind of rough is there's no online, so you're going to be playing with people who are, you know, if you have enough people who are interested and are in your house, which I don't have that. Yes. I mean, I can maybe get my kids to play like one or two things, but then the other thing is the hardware. I'll pwn him at the Metroid game. I'll show him what's what.
I'm sure that will last long after you.
I know. Kids. Yeah, but they won't care. They're entertained easily. So the other thing is getting the hardware altogether. So some of these you can play with just a Wii remote, but some of them take a nunchuck also. Yep. So if you have all of that hardware, which you might, I mean, if you've got a Wii kicking around, you know, maybe you've got that stuff available, but it just is kind of a, you know, tall order to get all of that together. But the Metroid game is basically a target shooting game, or there are enemies that you can fight. You can actually fight bosses and things like that. It's all three-dimensional. Everybody can roll into morph balls to get to different places. You have grappling hooks. You can grapple up to things. You can grapple onto the spaceship, and the person can fly you around and do kinds of things. You can shoot missiles that explode in a wide radius, and if you accidentally hit people, I believe there's friendly fire on every mode. A lot of fun. But all in all, like, it just feels like it's the kind of thing. I mean, even with Wii Sports on the original Wii, you just needed a couple of people, and you know, you could play tennis or something. And it just seems, I don't know that this will ever be as big a hit as Wii Sports. I don't know if we'll ever have that again.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have some kind of online functionality. I mean, if they're gonna,
well, Nintendo, I think they came out and said that, and I don't know. I don't know how much of this I can believe, but they said that they were trying to foster a local community where people kind of come together and play.
I don't know. It sounds
spinning. Wouldn't they have already established that with the Wii, though?
Maybe they're standing behind that notion of kind of people coming together and that social aspect that's absent from online.
But adding online doesn't take that away.
Right.
You know, and yeah.
It's additive, yeah.
Up to the launch of the Wii, everybody's like, hey, we still don't know how online's working. And if you really have a plan and you really want to show people what your online strategy is going to be, make something like this online playable. You know, foster a community of users if you're going to, you know, get something going on. Because other than that, I just don't see. I mean, the place that I played it, I don't have a Wii U. I play this at a little local game group that we get together with. I think I mentioned it a couple shows ago. We have a lot of fun. It really is a blast. It is a lot of fun, and people of all ages can play. People bring their kids. The adults play. It's just a lot of fun. And for people who are getting one on Christmas, I'm sure if they've got family around, it'll be a great time. But beyond that, it's like, I mean, in terms of the single player offerings, like if you're just going to sit down and be lonely playing your Wii U, I don't think there's a lot. You know, I don't think.
Which brings us to Super Mario Brothers U. Just me and Mario. No sign Luigi. Now. This is, for me, what's interesting about this is the first Mario game I played, and I think I played all the platformers. I didn't take his typing course. It doesn't feel as polished through and through. Visually, it's stunning. When you throw a fireball, the animation's really good. And it generally plays like a Mario game, but there's little things like I saw the turtle shells, they would hit an enemy and get lodged on them. The enemy wouldn't die. Enemies were getting stuck in the environment. Those things were noticeable. In most other games, I think I would overlook that. But in Mario, that usually doesn't happen. The glitches are questionable. You almost think they're built into the game. You know, where going back to the original one where you could, you know, hop on that platform that goes and you skirt across the level into a warp zone or the minus world. You never quite knew if this was something that was built into the game or what. One thing I can thank Sean for is turning me on to the difference in looking at polygon animations versus bitmapped ones. When you step on enemies, the way they squash, it looks a little bit cheap. I think these are minor complaints, and considering that the Wii U is demonstrated, it has about the same horsepower as the 360 or PS3. It's amazing that no one besides, Ubisoft can make a platformer that really compares to Mario. To me, it is something that's just fun. You can immediately jump right in. You know what you're doing. Really has that lore, captures the feel of the old games. Speaking of Ubisoft, the Rayman Legends demo just came out last night, and it's really, really good.
Is that different than the one that was on the kiosk?
Yes. I'm not sure if it's different from the kiosk.
Wait a minute, kiosks? Kiosks have demos.
Yeah,
almost every Wii U demo I've seen has just been video.
One demo.
Yes,
there is one demo on that kiosk.
There's two levels, and this one has a third one. I forgot which of the two, but there's one that's really cool. It's a, I think it's called Castle Rock, and what it is a speed run, much like the speed runs they have in New Super Mario Brothers U. And you're going through there, and there's this music. There's kind of this guitar clashing, you know, music. And every time a drum beat hits, you're jumping. And so it feels like this weird amalgam of Guitar Hero along with, you know, some kind of platforming speed run.
That actually is cool. On the kiosk. If you have a chance to see one of the Wii kiosks, do that one. And there's that one,
and then there's the Murphy level, and then there's a straight-up platforming, which has some really good music.
I don't know what you mean by Murphy level. So
the Murphy was all touchscreen. You don't actually control the character. Instead, you are using your finger. You really don't use the stylus. You're moving platforms around. You're tapping enemies. You're tickling enemies. You're doing all kinds of things to guide Murphy through a level. And from what I saw at E3, it looked like at one time one person was going to be doing this for another person. But now there's kind of an AI character, and the AI was really smart. He would not, kill himself. He would just kind of stand there, wait till the enemy was, you know, wait till the platform was in position or enemies were out of the way, which was really cool. So I had a little bit of fun with that. And again, if it had been too much Murray, just like when we were talking about Nintendo Land, too much of that in a sequence, it would have got boring real quick. But as they mixed it up, it was a nice little change of pace.
I feel really bad that I don't love Rayman.
Why don't you? Did you play the last one?
I played the demo of it. I mean,
I didn't really like the demo.
I mean, it was fine, and it looked really good, and it was awesome and good, and
get it for Vita, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you could even, I played it on the Vita, and you could, like, pinch it so that it would, like, zoom in or zoom out and stuff. It looked really good. I don't know what it is about Rayman. It's not me. It's not you, Rayman. It's me.
I kind of feel the same way about Rayman too. It's like there's just some disconnect there. I mean, I love the rabbits.
Is it the character?
He's just a little too French.
See, I dig him. I don't know. Maybe
Dig him the frog.
Yeah, no, maybe because I grew up in the one of the first PS1 games I got was Rayman, which was really hard. It got hard near the end, but I enjoyed it. And there's something about the games, I think, that have been consistently charming when he moved into 3D. There's the Dreamcast game, which got turned into the 3DS game. I don't know, I really like the games. They're just well-polished, they're visually very plush, and this one, the level design was really phenomenal. And that's the best compliment I can talk about Super Mario Brothers U. The level design is something that Nintendo does that no one seems to be able to match. Except for, you know, Ubisoft. So, hats off to level design. So, last not least, to talk about is Sonic and All-Star Racing Transformed, which, if you guys recall, I think I talked about on the show, we played it at E3. I was there with Sean. And I thought it could go either way. Obviously, one journalist wasn't as enthusiastic. In fact, he told the developers, who now include some ex-Bizarre employees, that it looked awful. And he started rattling off all the things that were wrong with it. It called disaster. And he kind of walked away. He was cursing at him. Which is really, you know, Sean and I were really surprised. In truth, the frame rate wasn't there. It was still early, so therefore the handling felt a bit wonky, especially in the flight and the water or, you know, kind of ship-based levels. But I'm glad to report that the final product is really fun. Arguably Sega's best game in years. It's got all the earmarkings of kind of a current kart racer. There's lots of Sega fan worship. You know, it's got a good roster of characters, except Danica Patrick, who feels really out of place there. Wreck-It Ralph kind of, you know, fits in there. Locations are really cool. There's the Afterburner course, and you have the little carts. They're doing hairpins around the island on an aircraft carrier. They're flying through a fleet that's firing a Jikarine radio, has you flying across, I guess it's Shibuya, the rooftops there. It's got a really good selection of weapons. One of the things that I enjoy, my favorite weapons, is this one that gives you a boost. And, and you have a meter on the back of your vehicle. You can't always see it. And when it goes into the red, if it goes too far, it's called Hot Rod, it will explode and it will backfire on you. But if you can time it just right, it sends out a ring of fire and it can, harm the enemies around you, your opponents around you. So really smart kind of things like that. Yeah, sure, there's the kind of green shell, blue shell kind of weapons, but, some really good variation on there. The AI is good. It doesn't rely on rubber banding too much. It's got, the game has a bit of variety. It's got different races, things like that. And I really think that $39.99, $40 price is pure icing on the cake. So really a good, if you're into kart racers, I know a lot of people are just tired up to their eyeballs in them, but I still love them. I like them because they have the racing, but they have, kind of weapons and there's a little bit more to them than that. I still enjoy them. And so I'm really enjoying this one. So Sonic and All-Star Racing Transformed, definitely a pickup.
And so is it, I guess one thing I'm not quite clear on, so this is sort of just an, like the Marvel versus Capcom, Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom, that sort of thing. This is a kind of an update to the previous.
Yeah, well, this one you can, the name Transform comes in, you can fly vehicles through the air or you can go on water. And when you're on water, it feels just like, we talked about it, that old Dreamcast game. Where you're in boats, the launch game. Thunder, yes. It feels just like Hydro Thunder. And so periodically what happens is when you're doing laps, the courses will actually change. And so the third lap will be completely different. It might be in the air or, certain parts open up. And so it's always kind of throwing you off and throwing you for a loop, which is really cool. So, yeah, that's where the Transformed, and it makes, Transformer-like noises when you...
Is there still any reason to have the old game if you get the new one?
The old game I really liked.
But I mean, is it different levels? Different.
Oh yeah,
I mean, is it empirically a different game from the previous one?
Oh yeah, completely different. Same basic kart racers. The old one doesn't have the transforming. The courses are different. If you are a Sega fan, if you do remember, and I wonder, if people are going to remember like the Skies, games, if they're going to remember, what's the one where you'd shake the maracas?
Samba de Amigo.
Yeah, if you're going to remember, because there was one for the Wii, but it kind of tanked. A lot of these properties, Sega's kind of, trying to keep them, feels like they're trying to keep them alive and relevant and stuff like that. But, to me, it's enjoyable just seeing them worked into the system.
Did they work in any sort of a Shenmue reference or anything? Or is it officially time to give up on
any hopes of Shenmue 3? I'm sure they're in there. I've probably covered at least 20 tracks. And there's a lot of, there's a good track variety. And there probably is one. Oh, I went through a Shinobi course, which is really well done. There were like faces in there, in the carved in the mountains and stuff like that, which is really cool. So, yeah, so... I like it.
So in terms of companies sort of, consolidating and putting their properties on display, because, the other game that recently had done that was the PlayStation All-Stars game. Do you feel like those are diminishing returns? But, I mean, by the same token, people will say like, oh, yeah, this really makes me want to play Shenmue again or, whatever. I mean, is that a successful strategy? Or
keeping their properties relevant, keeping them in kind of the public consciousness?
Yeah, I mean, is it a good idea, bad idea? I mean, where do you come down on that?
Hurt. I think, obviously it plays to kind of the fans like myself. And maybe I really don't see, people saying, I want to know a little bit more about, Shenmue. So I'm going to, hook up my, Dreamcast, to the television. I don't see that happening, but I don't think it can hurt. It can only benefit.
Hmm.
Yeah, if that way, if they do any sort of a future project with one of the forgotten series, you know, it's like, oh, hey, I recognize that guy from Sega and Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed or something like that.
And I realized I didn't see Knights, but I'm almost sure it's in there because they just had the recent HD. And leaving out Knights would be, you know, people would be up in arms. But I just haven't seen, I got through, I think there's 5 different sets of courses. And I haven't seen much repetition, and I'm in the second set, the end of the second set right now. Hmm. So there's a lot to unlock too, a lot of unlockable racers. So I've been hanging with Tails. He's been my go-to guy. Miles, on a same basis. Miles Prower.
What systems is that on? Is it just the Wii U,
PS3, 360, and Wii U? Oh, and 3DS, which may or not be out. And then I talked to the Sega. A lot of people are saying the Vita version is supposed to be coming out next week, but not until the new year.
Hmm.
Is there any special? You played the Wii U version, right?
Yes.
Yes. Is there any special gamepad-iness?
Oh yeah, you can play on the gamepad. I think you can use it as a rear view mirror, or you can have an overhead. Much like the DS versions of Mario Kart, you can have that overhead.
You can use a rear view. They out-Sony'd Sony.
Yes.
Wow. The PSP. The idea finally racers. Came home to roost.
Yes. So, that's cool. The one thing I noticed and about Sonic is maybe it's the speed, maybe it's what's going on the screen. You know that the gamepad, as I mentioned, is just kind of a dumb terminal. It's broadcasting a signal. And I noticed just a slightest bit of artifacting in that, where the visual clarity didn't quite match the screen, which I did not see in Super Mario Bros. Wii, where it looked really, you know, kind of spot on.
Hey, so can the gamepad reach your bathroom?
No, my bathroom's right next door. It can reach to, and I don't live in a large house. You know, I have about a 12-foot hallway that goes to a bedroom and then a living room. And the only place where I can play it outside my office is in that hallway. So,
yeah. Line of sight, is it?
Almost. It can cut one corner. It can cut a doorway, and that's about it. So,
what does it do when it drops? Does it...
It freezes, and then it puts a message on the screen, like a gray message that you need to get closer. But yeah, it pauses the game.
And that's always your primary controller, right, for all these other games?
No, I've been playing, what was I playing today? I was actually hooked up a Wiimote just because I could, and Classic Controller Pro to play it.
Oh.
And, which is interesting because the buttons feel a little bit... I don't know, just different. So it took me a little while to adjust that. But I was really happy that Nintendo decided to not be too money hungry, or maybe I'm not giving credit to Sega, decided to say, screw you, Nintendo. You're not selling the new $50 controllers. We'll let people use their old controllers. But
you mean using just the Wii Remote, or is it a Wii Remote? Is it a Wii Motion Plus you have to use? Or
No.
I'm of two minds about it.
The classic controller that came with Monster Hunter. I'm using that connected to a Wiimote.
Oh, I see. Because I have to admit, I'm not sure how to feel about the fact that they allow just standard Wii remotes to be used. I almost kind of wish they had just kind of drew a line in the sand and said, you know what, we're going to require Wii Motion Plus, because now we're sort of going to potentially be in, like, last-gen motion control land.
Yeah, I'm with you. And well, one of the things that's kind of a stickling point for me is the divide between digital and analog control, especially in racing games. If you allow, you know, racing games to use that digital, it's just, you know, you're always tapping, you don't have that precision. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go the other way, where you're using it kind of like a steering wheel, like in, Excite Truck?
Excitebox.
Yes, all the excitement that one show can handle. All those games, which worked, but it isn't my preference to race like that.
Mm.
So give me an old analog. I know a lot of people say, you know, steering wheel, but I'm so used. I've spent so many years racing with a analog stick that I'm used to it. No.
Yeah, same here. I got the the steering wheel that Microsoft put out, I think was like in the second or third year of the Xbox 360's lifespan. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it had like the force feedback to it. And I'm like, what the hell is this damn thing doing? It's like, it's like my times in Forza Motorsport got cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
or got doubled, I should say.
Yeah. At E3, we had a meeting with Codemasters, and we were looking at one of their F1 games. And I hold my own at the F1 games, well, at least until I play Europeans, and then I lose miserably. But, you know, it was Sean and Sage, and they asked someone, hey, you want to step up with our, you know, they had a whole rig set up with a stick shift, you know, the pedal and everything. And they said, who wants to try? And they said, well, you like the racing games the most. I think, you know, that's kind of your baby. So I went up there and totally embarrassed myself. I mean,
nice.
Turns about 20 miles an hour. I was, you know, bringing up the rear, and I'm just really used to a analog stick, not a steering wheel.
It takes some getting used to, but I think I've said before, I can do things with that steering wheel I could never do with a controller.
And I always hear that, but I just haven't spent enough time. I haven't.
It just takes some practice.
Yeah.
Come over to my house. We'll play.
That's it. I'm taking you up on the rain check, Jeremy.
Salt Lake City.
I will go.
All right.
I will occupy Jeremy's couch next year. Jeremy, tell me a little bit more about what you were playing. Sure.
Well, aside from the... So, to transition from Sega's stable of characters, I have to admit that in all of my sort of off minutes here and there, I've still been going back to the PlayStation All-Star as well. I know I didn't put it on the outline, and I'm not going to talk about it very much, but I'm sticking with it, and it's been getting more fun as I've played it.
How much time have you put in altogether?
Oh, I don't really want to talk about it. Like, I will just... I'll play around, and then I'll be like, let's do a rematch. Like, I could dominate these guys. I'm going to do another rematch. And it's pretty easy. I mean, if you need to change settings or something, or if you want to change characters, you have to go back out, and then it has to reload. So it kind of dampens the the experience a little bit. But I'll just, like, it's just right there on my Vita too. I've been playing it almost exclusively on my Vita, and it's just like, I'm playing it. There it is, and I'll just put more time into it. And I'm actually getting kind of competitive.
Okay. So. Does it translate your expertise that you got on the PS3 version? I know just a few buttons have changed and kind of the perspective. Does that translate to the Vita for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's, customizations that you do on your characters, which are kind of fun, they don't carry over. But other than that, all the movesets are exactly the same. I sometimes do get a little confused on the DualShock. You know,
what do you use for the item pickup?
On the Vita, you touch.
Touch the screen. Okay.
Yeah, you touch the screen, which honestly...
You have to touch the item or anywhere on the screen?
Anywhere on the screen. Okay. But I, as often as not, like, this is kind of one problem that I have. As often as not, I'll touch it and then think I didn't pick it up and then touch it again, and then the character will pick it up and then drop the thing. So that is one problem that I have. So I kind of have to be, like, in the clear before I can pick something up and really use it. But honestly, I don't spend a lot of time on the items anyway. But anyway, so I didn't want to talk about that too much because I know we talked about it last time, but I just felt like it was a pretty good transition because the other things that I have been playing have also been on the Vita. I've started to really dig into the PlayStation Plus offering. So I've been playing a lot of Gravity Rush. Mm-hmm. Which came out earlier this year on the Vita. I'm sure you've heard of it. Actually, the other tie-in here is that the main character of Gravity Rush, mm-hmm. The purple-eyed, black latex, weird pantaloon-wearing character Kat, is going
with
to be
a
cat with a K. That's right, like Catherine. But she also has a cat.
One Catherine.
Who is, yeah. And there's another character in the game named Raven who has a raven.
That's original.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But anyway, Gravity Rush...
My name was Hamster. I'd probably have one as
well. Hamster. Hamtaro. So Gravity Rush is a third-person sort of action platformer, I guess you might say, with light collecting element to it. And the concept of the game is that at any point, your character, Kat, who, by the way, I forgot the tie-in, she will eventually be a free DLC character in PlayStation All-Stars, along with Emmett, I think is his name, from...
Yeah.
From Starhawk. So anyway, it all ties in. Just wanted to make sure everybody knew there was a transition there. Anyway, she has the ability to turn off gravity and then to reactivate it on any point that you sort of choose. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can be running along and you can decide, oh, I need to be on that building across this plaza. and you hit the right trigger, I believe it is, and suddenly she will start floating, and you're suspended in place. And at that point, you can use the gyro in the Vita. You can either pick the thing up and look around, or if you wish, you can use the analog stick. And you basically aim a reticle at any surface that you can see, and then hit the button again, and she'll go flying through the air. That becomes the new down. And she will go flying, tumbling through the air, not always too gracefully, but eventually that when you hit, that is your new ground point. So then you can run up and down that building and pretty much traverse anywhere you want. I mean, if you want to, you can pretty much fly. I mean, you can just point the thing up in the sky, you know, get up as high as you want, hit the button again, readjust, and just shoot anywhere you want
It's been a while since I played the demo, but I don't know, something happened and I fell off the world.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is...
I'm trying to think because the whole, you know, gravity can be anywhere. You know, the field of gravity or the force of gravity, where gravity is pointing to.
It can be anywhere you want. And there are limits to that. So the setting of this game is you're in this floating sort of city that has been ripped apart by these mysterious storms. You know, off in the distance, you can see these roiling sort of, black hole looking things that... are just kind of omnipresent there. And you can't really go too far off the map. But other than that, it's almost an open world. They do have some little transitions. When you start out in a particular area that is, it kind of looks very... kind of like an austere, like 1930s kind of vibe to it. It's a little hard to describe, but it's almost like something you would see. I mean, it's almost M.C. Escherian, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're in this floating town, and it's just suspended out in the middle of space, and, Kat wakes up and has amnesia, which, whatever. But she starts to figure out that she's got these powers, and eventually to determine the source of these storms and what happened to this city, what's happened to parts of it. There are parts that are totally missing. Everyone's all in an uproar because, you know, they're missing family members or other parts of the city, you know, factories and other areas that have gone missing. And so she eventually goes to, learn more about that. And they sort of introduce the mechanics by having her gathering things and building a little home for herself. She kind of sets herself up as kind of this superhero, and everybody kind of is like, oh, the girl who can change gravity. And the enemies in this game are called Nevi. They are also kind of a pinkish purplish kind of they look like tadpoles and tentacles and just lots of different things.
Tentacles?
And
they're sort
of, tentacles. Yes, they are tentacles. But you have some very basic combat. You can kick, do some combos, kick, punch. It's all in the mind. that tied it back in. Eventually you can unlock some other powers. So eventually she gets this this super dive that she does where she starts spinning around and stuff just starts roiling all around her, and she'll you fix on a point and she'll just like tear it up, or you'll unlock a projectile thing where she starts to glow and like all this stuff just comes up off the ground, and then she starts throwing it just at any bad guys that you see there. And it really kind of it gives you a nice sense of power. The upgrades are done through collectibles, so there are these little gems all over, so it kind of encourages you to kind of run through the town and go on rooftops and explore hidden places under the city and things like that. And just generally the more you do, I mean, there are challenges also that you can do, races, beat the clock kinds of things. There are also defeat certain numbers of enemies to get points. There are leaderboards also against your friends, and just generally it's a pretty well put together little game. I have to say the music is awesome. It has one of the best soundtracks maybe of this year. Definitely go check it out on YouTube. It's got a very jazz kind of feel to it, and very light, airy kind of music. It's kind of hard to describe it, but again, just go check it out on YouTube. If you're listening on a computer or something right now, go check that out. And it has its problems. The game was originally, from what I understand, it was originally developed for the PlayStation 3. And I don't know if I can, back this up with any substantiated evidence, but if you think about what the gyro does in the PS Vita, you can also kind of do the same thing with a six axis. So yep. I've heard that it was originally going to be developed on the PlayStation 3, but they sort of ported it down to the Vita, and it has kind of that porty sort of vibe. I mean, it runs smoothly. Some of the loading times can be a little rough, especially on the challenges. I have found that rather than reloading challenges, I found that the load times are really good if I just make one attempt at a challenge and then move along. And I found that that actually keeps the pacing of the game going pretty well, too. The other thing is the story sequences in between missions are really kind of neat. They have, you know how you can do that fake 3D thing? What was it that used to do that? The original DS did something where, maybe I'm thinking of something else, but there was, oh no, it was the DSi when it first came out, and there was a little puzzle hunting game or something that did this fake 3D thing where, based on the movement of the camera, mm-hmm. you could sort of tilt the thing, and I don't know how it did it. It just sort of saw pixels moving across the face of this camera or something, but to you, you would tilt the thing, sort of like on a, I mean, I've seen the same thing in mobile phones also, mm-hmm. where you can tilt it, and it'll sort of do this sort of 3D-ish kind of thing. And it does that in these little motion comics too. So as these comics, come up, mm-hmm. you sort of tilt it, and you can kind of see behind certain things in the foreground, right. or see mm-hmm. in front of other things. It's kind of a neat little effect.
Yeah.
And you tap on the comics to sort of progress through what's happening. And the story's all right. It is a little, there are a couple of parts where it's, there's a part, for example, where it's like, oh, this dude, detective that she runs into, like, he comes and visits her, and she just happens to be in her towel, and oh no, now she falls, and like, oh, something covers it, you know. It's like, really? Like, we could have done without that.
Jeremy,
come on, don't you just love fan service?
Yeah, I don't know. It's all right, I guess.
It's an action game. Can we?
Well, it's an action game.
Demographic.
Yeah, but it is really cool, and again, if you've got PlayStation Plus, you probably are already playing this. If not, you should definitely look into getting it. I feel like, personally, it should... I mean, they've done a lot of the Game of the Years. The VGAs are over, and a lot of websites have already posted their Games of the Year. I would like to have seen this game get at least a nod. I mean, I don't know if it would have been the Game of the Year, but doing something like this on a handheld, there have been a lot of things on the Vita and the 3DS this year that have I think, really kind of been a little bit snubbed because of the scope of the platform that they're on. Mm-hmm. Kid Icarus Uprising was another one that was
definitely
good. And I don't think I've seen a mention of that anywhere. This is really a quality title, and if you're a soundtrack fan, if you're a game music fan like I am, it's just a great experience. I like to think about games of the year and those kinds of things as what were the great experiences. I have a hard time nailing down, like, what was the best game, but mm-hmm. it's a lot easier for me to nail down what was a great experience, and I feel like Gravity Rush has really been a really great experience, something I'm really glad I had a chance to play. Also on the Vita, again, also in the PlayStation Plus freebies, played a little bit of Jet Set Radio.
Which just reminds me, I called it Jet Grind Radio, because I'm stuck in
2001,
I believe.
I never played those games originally. This is my first time playing Jet Radio ever. And, and it's a little retro, however, and they've up-resed it, and it looks really nice, and you could almost believe that this was the first time this game, I mean, just for a quote-unquote little downloadable game or something, I mean, you could almost mm-hmm. believe this is something that they had just released. The idea of course everybody knows by now, so I won't spend too much time on this, but the idea of this is it's kind of a vaguely musically themed inline skating
platform. Orwellian.
Yeah, like you have this, you're sort of, actually, you know what it reminds me a lot of? And maybe they did this on purpose, but did you guys ever play Mark Echo's Getting Up?
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
I have it, but I think I only put like 2 hours
good. It was surprisingly good that game.
Yeah.
But it reminds me a lot of that, where you can do little graffiti mm-hmm.
yep.
tags, and you can sort of customize your own and make big versions and small versions. Yeah. And I don't, was it in the original one where you could actually create your own completely custom tag, where you could actually draw on it and write on it?
In Echo?
The original Jet Set Radio?
You can sort of do like a pixel by pixel thing, or there is a little drawing finger mechanic. It doesn't really work that well, but you can sort of touch and kind of draw what you want your graffiti tag to be.
I think it was in the original Jet Grind Radio, and I think you could also download other people's off the internet, maybe?
Yeah, it kind of seems, the interface sort of seems like the kind of thing that they may have come up with 12 years ago, but... So I kind of thought, like, it's probably been in there all along. But you can also do tricks and stunts, and you gain people into your crew, and it also has kind of a Space Channel-ish, sort of like, oh, we're all going to dance now kind of thing.
Like ooh la la.
That's a great...
Yeah, some improbable dance moves we're going to do while we're spray-painting things and spreading the word of music. Mm-hmm. So, again, I don't want to talk about that too much because I think everybody but me, I think, has played Jet Set Radio, but kind of a neat little diversion.
How, I mean, how's the port of it?
Well, it seems good. I mean, again, I don't really have
frame
much of a...
Rate. Solid.
Yeah, it plays really well. Okay. Even the load times aren't too bad. I mean, knowing that it is a port, I maybe give it a little bit of a pass in terms of...
I don't think I played Jet in about 10 years.
Really? Well, you should try this. Yeah. Especially for free, you know, if you're already a subscriber to that.
Can I mention something else that's free? That's really awesome.
What is free?
Maldita Castilla. The cursed castle, or that damned castle.
That sounds really familiar.
It is, they took 20 months to make it. There is a team, if you guys remember Ghouls and Ghosts, Ghosts and Goblins, that series. It is inspired by that. It's a PC-only game, but it is free, and it has this kind of interlaced pixel art aesthetic. It looks like you're stepping into the 80s playing a kind of Ghouls and Ghosts knockoff, and it almost has that kind of polish. Ghouls and Ghosts, if you guys are familiar with it, it was very difficult. Death is really, just around you. One wrong move and you're in your underwear. Another wrong move, you're dead. This one, it doesn't have quite that almost overwhelming sensation of like, oh my god, everything's out to kill me, the bird, the big guy, you know, the monster, the zombies, platforming. It's a little bit easier, a little bit more, just feels very arcadey, but very fun and a true homage that people should play and check out. So
my question for something like that is, as you say, if the lineage comes from something so difficult as Ghouls and Ghosts and Ghosts and Goblins, how does it control? Like, is it just WASD and or something? Or?
Yes, you can play WASD. I just plugged in a 360 controller. It automatically, you go to the setup, which is a separate program. It automatically recognized it, and one button for fire, another button for jump. And then you can have, much like Ghouls and Ghosts, you have different weapons. You start off with a dagger, then you have arching axes, and like Castlevania as well, like the big super weapons Castlevania, much like that. So plug in a controller if you have one.
Yeah, I bet.
And that's the experience. And it just looks really good. It turns your monitor into an arcade cabinet, the circa 1987, 88, somewhere around there.
So it's free. Do you go to the developer's website, or where do you...
Just do a Google. Yeah, go to, and it's Maldita, Maldita, Castilla, Castilla. So
your accent is terrible.
Thanks.
Maldita Castilla.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Maldita Castilla. The very last thing I've been playing...
How much did you have?
A few minutes. Unos minutos, señor.
Jeremy, before you move on...
Yeah.
Jet Set Radio. What
Jet
did you
Set
think
Radio.
Of the soundtrack?
It's good. It's very... again, it kind of has the... It really reminds me... You kind of, yeah, like the DJ. What is the DJ's name? He's like DJ something or other. DJ Pants.
DJ Shadow.
Yes. No. He's. Kind of, I don't think he's. I mean, I'm sure he's not a real DJ, but he kind of looks like a Dreamcast DJ. You know, kind of a ooh la la sort of thing.
DJ
and it is,
Professor K.
Yes. Yes.
What's his name?
DJ Professor K.
Oh, that's right. Oh my.
Yeah,
God.
That's right. And so I don't know. It's got like this innocent sort of like funky vibe. Like yeah. I don't know. It's like the Sharks and the Jets. Like they're all gonna dance and have fun. But yeah, it has a
a lot of our listeners are familiar with West Side Story.
I think that our listeners are discerning, savvy people who recognize the value of a good musical.
Okay.
I love musicals. Musicals are really good.
You mentioned Guys and Dolls. This podcast is it.
Did I do that?
Not yet, but...
I was going to say, because I generally, that sort brides. Of lens through which I view life is, the producers or...
Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Yeah, you're picking all the stodgy ones, though. There's some really good ones.
Cats.
Camp.
Yeah, no. Like I just mentioned, the producers is a really good one. There's the demon barber of Fleet Street, Johnny Depp. What's his name?
Edward Scissorhands.
I'm suddenly blanking on it. I can remember the demon barber of Fleet Street, but I can't remember the guy's name. Sweeney Todd. And one of my favorite musicals of all time was 1776.
Okay.
With it was really good. It's about the first or third Continental Congress where they drafted the Declaration of Independence. It's a really good one. Anyway. So it's the soundtrack to Jet Set Radio is nothing like that. Very funky, very toe tapping, and I should probably.
I love that we went on a musical tangent.
I could talk about a lot of musicals.
But, you gonna see this, Jeremy?
I don't know. Maybe like that one's kind of like it's too popular for me. Like I only like the really like underground stuff. Like
you're a hipster musical buff.
If they revived Camelot,
subway stations.
A law was made a distant year ago here. Good music in Jet Set Radio also. Very last thing that I've been playing is a recent release on multiple platforms. It's called Planets Under Attack by Targem Games. And I'm kind of interested in this one because I actually had brought up that there's apparently a genre of strategy games that's out there where the concept of RTS games where you have attack units that are built from resources, and it's been distilled down into something very, very simple. And there are several games like this. I first came across this kind of game a couple of years ago. There was an indie game called Aurora that had come out. I think it's actually been re-released and it's called Aura Lux now, but the idea of that game, or there's one on my mobile phone on mobile called Archipelago, where you have a bunch of little islands, and the idea of these games is that you have certain capture points, or they're also base points, or you know they're your territory basically, and each of these territories will automatically generate attack units, and usually they're swarms of things.
Yes, yes. What is the real popular one called for iPhone and Android?
I don't know. The only ones I'm familiar with are the ones I just mentioned, but they.
Oh yeah, and there was one on PlayStation. Spore. Mushroom?
It starts with an E. Well, there's Mushroom Wars 2, but there's also one called Euphloria, I think is the one you're thinking
okay,
of.
Okay.
No, there was Euphloria.
Mushroom Wars.
Yeah, Mushroom Wars. Well, and so it basically distills the idea of an RTS game. You know, there's no real territory to traverse. You just have point A, B, and C, and every point starts to generate essentially attack points. But in the case of Planets Under Attack, they're spaceships. In the case of Aurora, they're little points of light. Or Archipelago, they're like B-2 bombers and things from World War II. You may have opponents, and they're also generating, like over time, it'll just count up, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60. And then you essentially decide, okay, at what point am I going to send my swarm out and try and capture another position? And so Planets Under Attack uses that same formula, except in this case, the planets, the territories that you have, they all have little orbits. You basically start out in a solar system, and all of your planets have orbits. So there are not only different planets that may generate units faster and make them more difficult to assault, and some that are, you know, have different little upgrades or things, but depending on the distance of the planet, there might be a moment of opportunity that, you know, it might be good to send your swarm out. In Planets Under Attack, there are different factions. There's your humans, which are, you know, just the normal, as always, poor humans. There's also kind of like an insect swarm, which has like a high hatch rate and robots that can sort of repair themselves. And you also accumulate money as you're doing this, solars or something, I think it is in this. And you use those to launch your ships and also to do upgrades. So they've sort of taken the basic idea from things like, Aura Lux and those kinds of games, where there were no upgrades, no special abilities, anything like that. And they've sort of expounded a little bit on that. So I'm sure there's probably a genre name for this kind of game, and I don't really know what it is. Yeah, see if you can find something on that while I'm talking about it. But anyway, it's a really interesting kind of game, and if you've never played anything like it before, it really distills the idea of those games down into something that is pretty straightforward, but still a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of elements in this game that are there to kind of make things a little more flavorful and interesting.
I remember the name of the one I was thinking about, Galcon.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar too. Yeah. I think I may have actually played that one. So there are several, you know, there's some other prior art out there that that you can look at for this kind of thing. But this particular game was released on PC in September. It came out on PlayStation Network and on Xbox Live just last month in mid-November here. And it is a lot of fun. It actually has a lot of modes. There's, you know, multiplayer modes, couch modes. You know, you can play against AI. There's a whole campaign that you can play. So there's a lot to do. But I am not sure that I feel really comfortable paying the kind of price. It's actually $15, 1,200 Microsoft points. And especially when I've been playing a lot of stuff on mobile that's kind of similar but is, like, free or very cheap, it makes it a little bit tougher to really decide to play it, which is kind of a shame. And I feel like it's my fault, not really the game's fault. I feel like there is a reasonable asking price for games like this, and maybe $15 is it. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. I guess I'm just not sure how I feel about that, because as somebody who has to, you know, buy games, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that, and this is the same way that I felt about Quantum Conundrum, right? It wasn't that it was bad. It was just that if the game had been a certain price, I may never have played it, you know, at all. I just would not have prioritized that over other things. And Planets Under Attack has online modes. I haven't played any online games, and to be honest, I haven't really looked either. But it's the kind of thing that I don't feel like a lot of people are probably going to be playing. But you know what it reminds me of, actually? A while ago, EA had released a kind of a multiple version release of Risk. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you ever saw that. And it was a really clever game. I mean, they had different modes. I've got it twice. I've got it on two different platforms. And it's really clever.
But interpretation.
It was. And they had, you know, different little factions, like there were the Yetis and the cats and the zombies and things like that. And it really put a nice spin on. And it's kind of the same way that I feel about this. The thing is that as much as I really enjoyed that version of Risk, it's kind of hard for me to say, yeah, it was cheap. And it was hard for me to really say, you know, I would spend $15 on this over, you know, any of the other number of, you know, great similar games that, you know, similarly priced games that are out there. So maybe I, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure. There's definitely going to be a demo on Xbox. Everything's got a demo on Xbox, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a demo on the PlayStation Network, or I'm sure there must be a demo on PC, but try it out. See if it's your thing. Like I said, try it, even if only to just experience this kind of game. If what I've described, where all you do is you swarm your guys from one place to another and kind of expand, if that doesn't sound familiar to you, like you haven't played any of the, you know, five games that we've mentioned now that use a similar kind of idea, try it out just to see if you like it, because it really does. It makes it a little more complicated, and if you're not into the very you know, boiled down versions of these, because that was one thing that I really kind of liked about it when I played Auralux. I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. It's super simple. You just wait and then strategize on where you want to go. This actually takes that idea and, you know, it gives you an upgrade system, different technologies that you can get, different factions that have different strengths, and the orbit thing is really actually kind of neat. And I don't know that any other game that I've ever played, I think all of the points have been fixed points. And I think in this is the first time I've ever seen something where the little points travel around, which is in and of itself kind of an interesting idea. So try it out. Definitely try it out. It's worth your time to at least try it, and then you can decide if it's the kind of thing that you want to commit to. So
I found the heritage, Jeremy. It all dates back to Stellar Invasion by Bear Byte Software.
What year?
I don't know, but the according to the Wikipedia, 1987 Galactic Conquest was a shareware title for the PC, and that
I
was built on Stellar Invasion.
So, I believe it.
During the 80s.
And you know, the more I think about it, and I don't know if I've talked about this before, but I just want to make one comment about that, which is that we talk these days about, like, oh, a game is so innovative. Like, look, it lets you load your last save from your previous game. Like, oh, wow. Well, guess what? They were doing stuff like that 30 years ago, and we're now doing crap for innovation now in terms of what makes a game new and interesting. They came out with this stuff, shareware, in the 80s. I totally believe that something like this would have been around that long, but nobody cared about it. I mean, strategy RPGs go back to the Apple II, and nobody knows that.
RTSs, everybody talks about Herzog's Y, but I was really into General Chaos, if anyone remembers that from EA. And it was
General Chaos is
by the people that created Rampage. And
it is the number one game on my list for something that needs to be remade.
yes, General Jeremy. Chaos
for hours. I could just get lost
the in general
forever. Yes. Yeah, and then you'd always like, you know, because you'd get into the little fights, like your guys would get into that little fight little cloud, and then,
yep.
and you would, and then you would fight, and then you'd knock the other dude down, and they'd pull out a revolver and shoot you.
Yeah.
And you'd always like, I mean, I was 6 years old, but I'm sure I learned the expletives because, you know, I think it was if you were overwhelming the other guy so much, it would just give them kind of a, like a courtesy win sometimes. Mm-hmm. They'd mm-hmm. fall down and just shoot you. Because it was always my little brother that I was playing against, and I whooped him. But general chaos.
I love the art and the style and the whole RTS element.
And just the idea. Like, yeah. It was just really clever, and nobody's done it. So, anyway.
Okay. Blue. What do you got for me?
Hey, well,
where are you, Blue?
I am right here. I'm making a conversion.
Okay, what are you converting to? Buddhism?
I am converting to Vedaism.
Okay, wow.
I'm joining the team. basically,
the team, Blue.
What?
I said everyone's leaving the team these days.
No, join the team. We want the team. You know what? Nobody hates the Vita.
No.
Nobody hates the Vita. Yeah. Everybody loves the Vita.
Gama Sutra hates it.
Yeah, they kind of hate it. Jason Schreier over Kotaku hates it. I hate you, Jason Schreier.
They hate... one thing that they hate was the new Wii U controller. I think Snow, he said he actually hated it. But then he put all these kind of minor problems with it.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. Stuff is cool, and you know everybody likes the Vita. Nobody's making any bones about the fact that it's not selling well, but everybody loves it. Anyway, go carry on, Blue. Sorry.
Well, basically, I mean, for starters, the AT&T store was running a promotion where you could get a Vita with two games for $199. Some stores, for some reason, I don't know whether they got price dropped down to $200 already, and then that promotion got applied to the discounted price, or if it was just some glitch with certain stores or whatever. But basically, if you bought a Vita and two games, you could walk out the door and only spend $99.
Dang.
So,
hey, I have a question. Is the AT&T store, is it a 3G enabled Vita?
Yes, it was. It has the SIM card installed, pre-installed. Basically, it's my understanding, you know, the box on the one that I will that is going to be sitting under my Christmas tree is it was open on one side, and I was thinking, oh god, I hope it wasn't a return or something like that. But I checked into it, and it looks like AT&T, when the items get to the stores, it's like either they check them to make sure the UPS driver didn't like stick a brick in there, or they open the boxes up and pre-install the SIM card, which I believe was the case with this.
You should check the camera when you get it to make sure that it's not like pictures of the guy like rubbing it in his butt crack or something like that.
Oh, well, actually, you know, the bundle I got has an 8 gigabyte memory card with it, and it was sealed. So hopefully, you know, there shouldn't be anything on there unless it's
no
like
ass germs.
I did buy a used PSP at GameStop one time, and they had wiped it clean except for the memory card that was on there, and the memory card had some porn.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Handheld.
Oh, yeah. but yeah, so, I mean, I haven't gotten my hands on it yet. It's going to be a Christmas present under the tree, but looks like it's going to be that, and Uncharted, Golden Abyss, and Hotshots Golf World Invitational.
Wait. How do you know all this if you haven't technically received it yet?
Are you trying to tell me Santa Claus isn't real, Blue? Because I don't want to hear that.
I am not about to tell you Santa Claus isn't real. I mean, I've heard his voice myself on a Yak Back. But
he called me on Black Friday to tell me to go shopping.
But yeah, my family isn't exactly the greatest when it comes to keeping Christmas secrets.
Right.
I must admit I'm not that great at it either. But, you know, knowing that, you know, I got the Vita inbound, I went ahead and I also ordered Persona 4 Golden because, I mean, that was one of the big games I wanted to get for it, you know, whenever I did get it because of how much I enjoyed Persona 3 Portable, so I figured, you know, Amazon had like a promotional credit, like some like Facebook promotional credit thing or whatever. So I ended up getting it for like $35.
Awesome.
Shipped, and I'm like, yeah, that's a good enough price. I don't expect it to go that much lower in the next few months or whatever.
I don't want to be the new Dorito Pope, but Disgaea Blue, get that also as well.
That's definitely going to be on my radar. Also,
I don't get the reference. Is there a Dorito Pope reference in there somewhere? What is that?
No, I don't want to be the person who's plugging NIS all the time.
Oh, Dorito Pope. Okay, all right.
The shame.
Would that make you Pretty Pope?
Yes. Yeah, dude.
But yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to sitting down with that, and I'm also thinking about you know, maybe getting some fighting games for it. I mean, that's one thing I love about you know, like the 3DS. I mean, by far my fighting games have gotten a lot more usage than the rest of the games. So I'm trying to decide if I want to get Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom, if I want to rebuy Blaze Blue Continuum Shift Extend.
I can vouch for Marvel versus Capcom. That's a really good translation.
Street Fighter Cross Tekken's another option. Blaze Blue.
PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
That's $20 over at GameStop.
Get it.
I might have to
consider it.
Yeah, you should get that, because the only reason I'd say hold off is get the PS3 version, but you don't have a PS3, so yeah, pick it up for $20.
Yeah,
I might have to do that.
You should watch. They actually just had Wednesday Night Fights. I've kind of been looking to see how that game's been doing in the professional circuit, and there are people who are, I mean, there are people who can do some really impressive things with that game. Like, I guess there were people like that for Smash Brothers too, like the wave dashing people and people who are like really good at Smash Brothers. There are people who are getting really good at PlayStation All-Stars, so it definitely has the potential to be
that's a cool. deep game. Yeah, that's cool. I hope that's enough to kind of carry the game.
Yeah,
we
well,
can see it like a sequel or two.
I mean, I don't know how much room there is out. I mean, there have been a lot of fighting games coming out in the last couple of years, so I don't know how much love there is to go around. But
even in the last couple of months, I mean, Tekken Tag Tournament 2, Dead or Alive 5, Persona 4 Arena. I mean, it's been quite a bit. What the hell was I going to say? I have such poor memory.
Sorry, I guess we're looking at
You know, I mentioned Blaze Blue Continuum Shift Extend a minute ago. I have been sitting and playing that for the last week or two. I picked that up during Black Friday. The limited edition was on sale at Amazon for $20 with a 17-song soundtrack CD and an art book. But basically, I bought it for the soundtrack CD because the music of Blaze Blue is absolutely phenomenal. And then I must say, even though it has a few less tracks than, quite a bit as far as track count goes, compared to the original Calamity Trigger limited edition soundtrack CD, I mean, I think the overall quality of the one that comes with Continuum Shift is really, really on the same level. But as for the game itself, I've been working my way through the story mode. Continuum Shift Extend has several upgrades over the basic Continuum Shift. It includes all of the DLC characters, which I think are like $7 a piece or some ridiculous amount like that.
Yeah, they never dropped. Like, what the hell was Access doing there?
I mean, for this, you can pick it up for this, you know, couple of bucks, like a dollar or two cheaper than just the DLC alone. And, I think some of the other differences, basically, this one includes a new character called Rulius Clover, which is Carl Clover's father. And I haven't gone through his story mode yet, but there's some twisted experimentation going on or something like that.
Is this the game with the guy that goes like, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, you're already dead?
No, that's
the one with
the North Star.
Oh, yeah, like Ken's Rage or something like that.
That's the one who kind of looks like Harry Potter with a tall hat, right? And shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the rat-a-tat-tat, you're already dead, there was a reference to Fist of the North Star in Lollipop Chainsaw. It's like she jumped on a couple of zombies' heads, and then she stands and poses, and like, you're already dead, and their heads explode.
Weird.
But anyways, as far as Continuum Shift Extend goes, they added a couple of new story mode elements, one of them being a abbreviated or bridged or whatever retelling of the events of the first game, which I played through. I mean, the first game, there's a lot to take in, and some of it's kind of convoluted. And even after playing what's called Calamity Trigger Reconstructed, you know, it's like a lot of things seem a little bit clearer, but there are still some things that kind of leave you scratching your head. It's, I mean, there's a lot of lore in the Blaze Blue universe,
right?
And if in next year's, I think it's Chrono Phantasm or something like that, I'd love to see them do like some sort of an encyclopedia in the game where it's like, you know, it has all the terminology and this, that, and the other thing, and you can just reference them just on the fly.
What is Phantasm?
Phantasm is going to be basically it's the next...
Blaz Cross Guilty Gear? that would be awesome.
That really would be neat. I'm surprised it's taken them so long to get on that ball. But it's supposed to be the next Blaze Blue. They're changing around some of the sprites. They're adding a few more characters.
Some more tweak, not necessarily a new game.
I think it's probably going to have new story mode elements. But I must admit, the Blaze Blue games don't really feel that different from each other, aside from the story mode.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do like is that they seem to keep every stage from the previous version and just add to that roster. That's a good feature to have. There's no sense in tossing away the assets because, I mean, hey, get kind of used to them. You might find a stage you're attached to or whatever. It's better to just keep it. But one thing that did not make the jump to Extend was the Legion mode from Continuum Shift Vanilla.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a board game capture point type strategy game where you could assemble a team and you'd take on certain fighters and then you'd get to pick a fighter from the team you beat and add them to your team. And your goal was to reach a certain point or conquer the board or something like that.
Yep.
But in all honesty, it doesn't really feel like that much of a loss. The single-player content has... there's a ton of it. The Abyss mode has been improved a bit. Basically, you have this, like... I think it's like 999 levels deep Abyss. And basically, you kind of work your way down levels by, you know, fighting and doing moves and stuff like that. And after every 20 or so levels you descend, you face, like, I think it's usually the unlimited form, which is like a hyper Super Saiyan-styled version of the normal characters. And if you beat them, then you can, like, choose a reward that will either increase your, you know, your attack, defense, your heat gauge, or I think it's it's something else. Maybe it's a guard, something like that. You can also get like items that will recharge your heat gauge continuously or regenerate health, or you can just earn the in-game currency, which you can use to buy unlockables and some artwork in the gallery mode. But yeah, I mean, as far as content goes, I mean, I think you can get the game for like about $15 or so, and there's a ton of content that will really earn that price.
Cool.
And you know, I'm a big believer that if you're going to get a game at a deep discount, why not throw a few bucks toward the DLC too?
Yeah, and with this, the DLC...
Jeremy, like, did you buy the Quantum Conundrum DLC then?
I didn't even know there was DLC. the DLC's on the PC version, I think. PC only.
Are you sure?
I believe so. I don't
remember. Oh, you skirted my trap.
Yeah. You know, I never did the other DLC I've been keeping an eye out for is the extra missions on Valkyria Chronicles.
Which
they actually dropped some of those in price just recently. And then now that BioShock 2 is on PlayStation Plus, I feel like I already had paid for it, but a lot of people say that the Minerva's Den DLC for that is supposed to be really, really good. I've never played it. So
Valkyria, is that for the first or second one?
For the second one. It is for the second.
There was a deal that they had, and I bought everything for like, I don't know, 18, 17 bucks? DLC. So I own all the DLC, and I haven't even gone through it, which is...
There's some crazy stuff about DLC. I mean, they just released Theatrhythm on iOS. Did you guys see this? Where somebody calculated all the cost of the DLC. I don't know what it is on the 3DS, but if you get the iOS version, it's like $150. You get the game with all the DLC.
Well, Sony released... What was the music program they released last week?
Was it a karaoke game of some sort?
No. It was one of those music creation suites. And every pack had DLC. So if you wanted R&B, $5. If you wanted dubstep, $4. If you wanted drums, $2. And so you add it all up, and I think it was over $100.
That sounds about right for loops.
I was gonna say though, if you compare that to, you know, like the software that you'd be buying on the PC,
I used to get the Magix with an X. There was like,
oh yes,
sweet. Oh, Blue, I can't believe, you know, you could get a whole suite for like $30. So I know some people are gonna say, well, you don't need the R&B and the dubstep, but you know, you want to get
if you want some country bluegrass dubstep, you're gonna need
Gangnam Style.
So should we move on to trivia?
Sounds like good to me.
Yeah, we have fan trivia this week. One question.
Fan trivia?
Yeah, fan trivia. That was pretty
good. That means it's actually going to be a high-quality trivia.
Oh.
Did I say that out loud?
And somebody gets dropped from the call.
Yeah. You suck, Mont. Okay, trivia time. That's going in the show. This coming week, a free download of Street Fighter Cross Mega Man will be offered to PC owners thanks to Capcom's cultivation of a fan project. Challenge
that is so awesome, by the way. That is so great of them to do that.
Badass.
Challenging Blue to battle Blanca and company. Thinking back on Mega Man history, which of the following boss characters didn't get into a fight with Dr. Light's shining creation? Was it A? And see if you can figure out the motif here with the answers. Is it A, Hard Man, B, Man, C, Squirt Man, D, Flash Man, or E, Wood Man?
Oh my god. Wait, what was... I didn't actually hear the second one. What was the second one?
Snake Man.
Hard Man, Snake Man, Squirt Man.
Hard Man.
Good. And the listeners deliver.
Oh man, that's brilliant.
An innuendo in your endo. I can't remember Squirt Man.
I'm just losing it.
Somehow I don't think
Wait a minute, who was it in Mega Man 10? Wasn't there a woman? Wasn't there a Squirt Woman?
Splash Woman.
Squirt Woman. A Splash Woman. All right. I'm going to ask you to read those one more time because I've been kind of distracted.
Got
here.
A, Hard Man, B, Snake Man, C, Squirt Man, D, Flash Man, or E, Wood Man.
It's got to be Squirt Man.
Great answer, Squirt Man.
Tell me there's not a robot master who was somehow an industrial squirting robot. That...
I know. How did this happen?
Missed opportunity.
Number two, it's hard to even mention Mega Man without referencing Keiji Inafune. Name his favorite Rokuman and the one he described as his least favorite because of, quote, what happened into the game and what was behind the release of the game. Okay, so two games, one his favorite, one his least favorite. A, Mega Man 2, favorite, least favorite, Mega Man Battle Network. B, Mega Man 2, Mega Man 3. 3, Mega Man 1, Mega Man 5. And D, Mega Man 4, Mega Man Legends. Ooh. So favorite, least favorite.
Mm.
Inafune.
I am tempted just to troll people and say that his favorite was Mega Man 2 and his least favorite was Mega Man 3. And what did you say the reasons were? Because of what went into it and what went on behind it?
Yep.
This is a doozy.
Is it more of a troll answer to say Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3 or Mega Man 5 and Legends? Is that what was the last one?
There was 4? 4 and Legends.
4 and Legends. Which one is more of a troll answer? Legends.
Probably hating on Legends. Though if he cared about Legends enough to make 3 or at least want to make 3, then I kind of don't think he'd call it his least favorite.
Unless he wanted to improve upon it so much that he wanted to make a third one.
I think... Let's see, what was the one with Mega Man 1 and...
5.
1 and 5. I think I'll go with that one.
That kind of seems like a likely answer, because he would really like the first one, because it was his first one, and then they just kind of got kind of dumb. I bet Blue is right, but I'm going to go with Mega Man Legends, because it was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Correct answer. Correct answer. B, Mega Man 2. Favorite, Mega Man 3, least favorite.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Trolling answer. Do you know why he made Mega Man Battle Network, by the way?
Why was that?
His inspiration? That was for his son. He won the game. But his son could enjoy. It's kind of cool. So,
it's too bad it was lame.
Yeah, that's trolling. Okay. Of course, Inafune also had a hand in some titles starring characters without arm cannons, or, as we know him today, Megabusters.
Megabusters.
Yes, I almost forgot what they were called for a second. Name the title the artist can't take credit for. A, Magical Quest starring Mickey Mouse. B, Chippendale Rescue Rangers. C, Yonoid. D, Legends of Zelda, The Minish Cap. Or E, Dark Void.
Now, does this mean that he would have any part in it, or would he have the part as, like, the producer or something?
Producer, artist, somewhere along.
Anything? Sorry, what was the very last answer?
Dark Void.
Dark Void?
I think I'm going to go with Yonoid.
That kind of seems like it would be the choice that you would pick, but then he was somehow, maybe he, like, decided the art direction for the Noid.
Make him more annoying.
Yeah, oh my god. Oh,
needs more shit.
needs more. Oh man. I'm gonna say Dark Void.
Dark Void, the Western creation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Anyway, I'm gonna say Dark Void.
Correct answer. Magical Quest starring Mickey Mouse.
Oh crap.
Whatever.
Well. Whatever.
Whatever.
Going diva in the middle of
trivia. Next question.
Going back to Street Fighter Cross Mega Man, yes. The game features a chargeable Mega Buster, which, believe it or not, was once a source of controversy for the Mega Man series. Critic Jeremy Parrish called the addition a game-breaking innovation. Name the Mega Man game which first contained the contentious alteration.
Mega Man 4.
I'm sorry?
Mega Man 4.
Jeremy.
Well, you don't have to act like it's
A, Mega Man 3 for the NES. B, Mega Man 4 for the NES. C, Mega Man 3 for Game Boy. D, Mega Man X for SNES. Or E, Mega Man Legends for the PS1.
Judging by how quickly and confidently Jeremy said Mega Man 4, I think I'd kind of be a dunce not to agree with him.
Jeremy, do you want to stay with your
answer? I'm going to change my answer.
Good for you.
You son of a bitch!
No, I'm going to change it to Mega Man 4.
Correct answer, Mega Man X for SNES.
Oh, really?
Oh,
I'm just kidding. Right, Jeremy? It was Mega Man
4. Man!
All right, you
got me. I deserved it.
So, number 5, today's final trivia question comes from listener Chocolate Rain. Remember Chocolate Rain? He does.
Chocolate Rain.
Who asks... Everyone remembers Chocolate Rain, that YouTube video that went viral a few years ago. What video game is a song which shares both the same melody and drum beat? A, Charles Barkley's Shut Up and Jam. B, UN Squadron.
Oh my God, I hope that.
C, Street Fighter 2. Or D, Tetris 2.
Ooh.
That is really weird.
Chocolate Rain.
Chocolate Rain. Crap.
UN Fighters.
There is Jeremy UN Fighters was not on the list.
Wasn't it? I thought you said UN. Didn't wasn't it? Oh, UN Squadron. No, I don't like that. No, not UN Squadron.
Those guys.
I think I'll go with. You know, it's probably going to be a cop out answer, but I know Street Fighter gets a lot of use in music and background tracks and stuff like that. So I'll go with Street Fighter 2.
You know what? This was like a Capcom themed thing, wasn't it?
It was.
All right, that's a good answer. I'm going with that.
Correct answer, UN Squadron.
Ah, shit.
See, I was right, but then you talked me out of it because on the technicality that it was the wrong name.
And Fighters. Had it been Jeopardy, you would have lost money on that one.
Had it been Jeopardy, I'd have had it written down in front of me, so I wouldn't have made that mistake.
Alex writes down the questions?
I don't know. Don't they have them all on the big board there?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay.
All right.
Mailbag, we got a question from Hellcat Ace. What was the last game that each of you played that had a mechanic that made you say, this is really cool? Jeremy, you already answered that.
I was going to answer this also further to say that I don't know if I'm really just easily amused. I just really love video games, and I try to see the really cool stuff in every video game. So it wasn't that long ago that a game made me say, wow, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So like, I don't know, Gravity Rush was really cool.
Okay.
You know, that's a good question. I really don't break things down like, oh, I like this mechanic or I like that. Most of the time it's like, I like a game and then I like a game, but that sucks and this is shit and they should have done this different.
So the glass is half full.
Yeah, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this glass is mostly full,
Shitty.
But one of the ice cubes has a fly in it or something. I mean, recently the only thing I can really think of is like I was playing Forza Horizon recently, and I like how when you get up like about 160 to like 200 something miles an hour, it's like the car will shake more violently.
Yeah,
and it's like it's a little bit harder to make out the road, and it really gives you an incredible sensation of speed. That really is the only thing that jumps out at me at this particular moment in time. I finished that game yesterday, by the way, and that last race was a fucking bitch.
You have to fight the boss?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a street race around like around most of the game area. And mm-hmm. I mean, I was playing it on normal, and I cranked it up to hard. I figured, you know, I'll get the achievement for racing on hard. And it's like I kept trying and trying and trying. And it's like eventually I kicked it down to medium. Then I was using medium, but I was using the guideline, and then I turned on reverse, and then I put it on easy. It's like, because the cars are so evenly matched, if you get like 5 to 10 seconds behind, you might as well just restart, or otherwise you're wasting
time. Was the boss a 200 mile per hour vibration?
Damn.
How about you, Roberto? What's really cool?
You know, I would say something recent, but one thing that really stuck in my mind is a good amalgam. And going back to Metal Gear Acid, combining what I would think would never work, the Metal Gear universe with a card game, just sounds like a horrible idea. But both games had me hooked, and I wish that they were available to play again now that I have a Vita and a PSP Go digitally. Did you guys ever play that? Metal Gear Acid?
No, but I really wanted to, and I played a lot of card games that were similar. In fact, there is a new Uncharted game that uses a card-based mechanic. But I don't want to diminish your answer, but that's the last time you thought that there was a game mechanic that was really cool?
No, I just wanted to reach and not say something from last week.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
No, I'm into amalgams. Honestly, when I was playing, as I mentioned before, Rayman Legends last night, I thought that whole mix of kind of the music and speedrun, I thought that was really cool.
Wasn't that awesome? And yeah. You know, did you ever try and break it? Because I found out that eventually...
I did do a missed jump once and broke it, yeah.
On purpose?
No, not on purpose, on accident. I suck.
Yeah, no, no, but that is a really cool level, and it's a demo, and it's pretty neat. But I remember because I played it at a Best Buy kiosk, and I was like, wow, that is really cool. I did, because I went back afterwards, and I'm like, what happens if you get off rhythm? Because they time everything, so like the jumps and the smashing Vikings or whatever it is that they're doing, and then you start jumping and sliding on things, and then it does like this guitar, like, and I was like, wow, how do they time that? But then I found out, once you break it, you kind of figure out, oh, it's actually just timed to be that way, and there's no way to get off of it. But it is, it's still, you know, I don't want to peek behind the kimono or anything, but that's, it is still really cool. Yeah.
So, I think we need to keep that expression around.
Yes,
that's a real expression. Lift the kimono, or you know, peek behind the kimono.
Right. We got a question from Cipher
Cyanide.
Oh, Jeremy.
Fours and ones and threes. It's Leet. Come on, get a brush up on your Leet speak. Forget your Spanish.
He just told me I suck, so I've given up all hope. What recent sequels didn't quite sell well enough to be able to have another go?
So it specifically has to be a sequel.
Yeah.
That didn't sell well enough.
There's a lot of buzz talking about Blobs 2, how it didn't sell as well. It only sold
baloney.
Seven and a half million copies.
That's baloney. I don't know where all these Call of Duty naysayers are, but they should probably just...
You don't think selling 7.5 million is good, Jeremy?
No, I'm saying it is good.
I know, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, it's great.
I don't think Max Payne sold well enough, sadly. It dropped really quick. Answer. So I don't think we may see more Max. It could be another 10 years before Max returns.
So. I don't know. What are all the Sony things that have been coming out lately?
Yeah. I can't help but think Codemasters is when they put out F1 All-Stars. I think we'll see another Dirt, but I don't think we'll see some of their stuff.
How about Darksiders 2?
Because of THQ.
Because of THQ.
But don't you think someone could sell the property? I mean, Darksiders 2 did well enough critically and commercially for someone to kind of pick up and, you know, vulture out the property and pick that up.
I don't know. It didn't do that well commercially, did it?
I think so.
Set the world on fire.
No, obviously not enough. But hey, now they got, what, $8.5 million to work with? Which
Really? Last I heard it was... Oh, you mean, are you talking about the bundle that they did? Because I heard it was something.
I think it closed today, which is probably a drop in the bucket, probably, what, 3 months for THQ?
Yeah. That's interesting, though. And then they gave away Metro, which was kind of interesting. Yeah. You know, it seems like I heard somewhere that maybe they're doing this just because they want to get some goodwill out there, and they know that they're not going to come back. So they're just like, we should just get our games out to people.
I think we're going
to
see Fear 4.
Maybe they should be, like, if they really wanted to build up their goodwill, they should release another fucking patch for WWE 13.
Right.
There's something that doesn't deserve
another sequel.
Can I tell you
the best thing? And I know you guys have been talking a lot about WWE 13, but I want to tell you, I just discovered something that is awesome. Have you guys seen the video game character Wrestling Knights or whatever, where they have...
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. But they do it on
Video Game Championship Wrestling?
Yes. Have you guys ever watched that? That is the best, where they take... Is it AI? I mean, it must be AI characters playing each other.
I think so, yeah.
And they dress them up. They customize the characters so that it's like Waluigi versus Goku or something like that. And then they'll just let them go. And they have this whole seeding system and stuff. And they eventually figure out who the champion is. Last championship that I saw was Ganondorf versus Bowser.
Inferno match.
Yes.
It was like an Iron Man Inferno match, and it was like ended up being like, what was it, like 20-something to 3 or
it
nine,
was amazing.
Something like that.
So good. That's the best thing
WWE 13 has given us.
Yeah, neither here nor there. But I think the road to profitability is littered with underperforming sequels. So I guess you can probably take your pick.
Okay. I was looking around. Crackdown 3, probably not going to happen. Fear 4, probably not going to happen. Darkness 3, highly unlikely.
What about maybe the SSX remake? That didn't seem to
that's
light
true.
The world on fire.
That was really good.
Yeah, so sadly.
Oh well, quality is not necessarily the driving factor in success, unfortunately. Marketing is.
Certainly.
Yep.
Next question, Handsome Jack. Oh no, wait, Blue, you didn't Did you?
Oh, I was going to say, I think I'll probably go with WWE 13. I mean, both because of THQ's current condition and because, I mean, WWE 13, I mean, it sold well, but I don't think it sold quite as well as WWE 12.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure if that part of that was because of Hurricane Sandy, you know, damaging, you know, quite a bit of the East Coast. But
you don't think that WWE will buoy up another entry into the video game series just for the promotional cross promotion?
I think they have to, don't they?
I could see them doing it, but I don't. I mean, WWE 13 is. I mean, there's been a lot of backlash on forums over, you know, you know, the one count glitch where, you know, there's, you know, no, like hardly any two counts and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of, like I said, there was a lot of potential with WWE 13, but they needed to give it more time. And that's something that the WWE itself was not willing to give. They apparently THQ had to release it when they did because the WWE demanded it. And it's a shame.
I know a good one. Nintendo Power.
Oh.
I thought you were going to say N4, 99 Nights 4. Remember that one?
Yeah.
I remember 99 Nights.
They came out with a sequel.
There was one sequel.
And
I kind of wanted to play that. Wasn't that a Western developed game?
Dynasty Warriors. That was totally.
Yeah,
Japanese.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, what do they call those? Musha games. Mushus. Like that.
Yeah.
Mushu. Yeah. I kind of want to see a Western take on that. I want to see a Western company do something like that and do something really different and awesome.
You know, the closest they did was the Warriors of Troy, the Troy one, where they had a Canadian Koi had a Canadian developer come in and use the engine. And Jeremy, it sucked. It was awful. So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not talking about like a Koei subsidiary. I'm talking about a real developer. sorry, Koei.
Man, somebody's really got the troll cap on.
Yeah. I know. Why am I so sassy? I don't know.
Get your my soul.
I remember the promotional video where the first trailer for 99 Nights is like a whole bunch of people running at somebody, and then like some magic attack. Happens and they all go flying, and it's like when you're seeing it for the first time in HD and next gen and stuff like that, it's just like, oh, whoa, shit, I have got to get this. And then like the reviews came out and it was like crap. I'm like, hey,
just keep hitting it.
Yeah, but those games don't do well in Western territories. I think who's the only one that appreciates them besides me?
Dynasty Warriors fans?
Sterling.
I know Jim Sterling. I know of one person. I know that Chi Kong Lu over at Game Critics really likes him, but
okay,
I don't know.
Cool. Handsome Jack, is this the final generation for dedicated portables? Have smartphones effectively killed the market?
I can only answer this personally, not for me.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't that a contradiction?
Well, I mean, it hasn't killed my market. I can't answer, you know, I mean, there's...
I plead the fifth.
Well, there's no way, I mean, I... Yeah, fine, yes, Robert, is that what you want me to say? Yes. Smartphones have killed the market, Robert has pronounced it done.
I think Nintendo's got one more go-around.
You know, I don't think we've even seen anything near what this current generation of... portables is going to do. I mean, if they kill it off too early, like maybe in the next like 2 to 3 years, there's already like talk, or you know, maybe even a release of a new, you know, PS Vita or 3DS or whatever. I think that'll
done.
Do it.
But I think Nintendo, if they're making money on it, and it shows potential, and I do think that they're making money on the 3DS, I think they'll have another go round with it.
And to me, I think there's still a market for it is the thing. I mean, we've been talking for a long time about like, oh, smartphones. Like, I mean, there have been maybe one or two games that, you know, were comparable to the kind of experience you could have on a dedicated gaming handheld. But I just don't see it. And that's why I was saying I can only answer for me. I have never been tempted even once. I mean, if they're, you know, as long as they keep releasing dedicated gaming handhelds, I'll keep going that way. I mean, smartphones to me are always going to be a curiosity at best. In terms of games, maybe that will change one day. They are technically capable of doing that. It just, we haven't seen that. It's been lowest common denominator stuff, app store stuff, you know, hundreds of thousands of things. And
I think part of it is for at least for me, is the interface issue, where, you know, everything's kind of touch screen based and kind of simple there, and virtual D-pad, and I'm not a fan of that. I know the Xperia Play tried to bridge that, but I don't really know the status of the poor Xperia.
And even the ports. I mean, when they, you know, I've heard that we were talking about TheaterRhythm a little bit earlier, and I've heard that it's kind of laggy and kind of doesn't feel as tight as it does on a dedicated system. I mean, if you want a dedicated gaming experience, you'll have to get a dedicated console.
On 3DS, it feels perfect.
That's nice and tight. And I've heard the iOS version is just kind of like more. And I even got, you know, I remember, was it, I think you had been talking about those MOGA
things. Yeah.
Yep.
And I have another one today. Yeah, did you get one of those? I got one of those, too. Like, I don't even know if I've got a phone that'll support it, but it's like $5 in shipping.
Android, right? 2, 3 plus.
Maybe. Yeah, something like that. And, I mean, even if that turns out to work out really well, I just don't see that being my, I mean, I spend a lot of time on my Vita, for example. I play my Vita more than anything else. And I just don't see that ever being the case with a phone.
Right.
I just don't see it.
The one thing I was going to suggest, if you get it, and to the listeners, let me boot it up right now. There is a app which allows you to use the MOGA with MOGA IME settings. Kind of unlocks it, allows you to use it with any software.
Oh, cool.
So get that. It's kind of a free download and opens up the MOGA universe for you to use.
Oh, that's cool. So So Handsome Jack's question, is this the final generation for dedicated portables? I mean, think about this. What if Nintendo adds a phone function to a DS? Or what if Sony adds phone functions to
Would Nintendo ever get into the cell phone market, though? It doesn't seem like something that they would jump into, especially, you know, against Android and iPhone and stuff like that.
Converging on the video game market before that happens.
But if you say you're Nintendo and you're faced with two options, your options are either to sell your software on other people's platforms, mm-hmm. or your option is to add, you know, telephony functions to your gaming device. Which do you think they would choose first?
I think it's a false dichotomy. I don't think that they would do either of those.
What do you think they would do?
I'm trying to agree.
But I'm just saying, given those two options, I mean, I guess my point being that, you know, dedicated portables, I guess, what does that mean? And is there a possibility? I mean, I guess the assumption here is that these companies are just going to say, nope, that's it. We're out. We're not going to do games for those anymore. We're going to do games on phones, and that's it. And I feel like there are potentially other options out there, you know, adding phones to those gaming systems, making the gaming the primary function, but making a phone function or some other function a secondary function.
So
I mean, they've added.
It didn't work so well for Sega.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And you know, it's obviously.
Just Jeremy. It didn't work out for them.
Oh, I thought you said it didn't work out well for Sega. Yeah, yeah. It did not. No, of course it didn't. But they've added, you know, they've added Gmail functionality to the Vita. You know, I mean, they can patch stuff in or release a new version of something. And, you know, if that's the difference, I mean, if that is really the key difference for people, having a phone that also plays awesome games, I mean, then you still have the phone function. And what is it that you really want from it? So I don't know. I'm going to say no, just because I think that the assumption kind of behind the question is that, you know, that our options are going to be iPhones or nothing, you know,
right.
I don't think that's going to be the case.
I do Plus think I... you brought up a good point earlier, Jeremy, is that no one's saying that the Vita hardware is corrupt. It's just Sony's marketing and the amount of software that's on the horizon. Not that's put out. I think they put out a fair amount, but what a Vita owner currently has to look forward to is not being articulated.
Or what is there currently. I mean, the system's been out a year, and it has one of probably the best backlogs or back libraries maybe of any gaming platform possibly ever.
What?
In the first year.
Well, I mean...
The best library ever for any...
I mean, first year one?
Yep.
I mean, what about the Game Boy Advance, though? That had a really, really good launch lineup. And I'm not just saying that because of Fire Pro Wrestling, which ended up ruining the entire system for me because I didn't want to play anything else.
On that one.
Maybe you writers can write something about it.
I see what you did there.
So, if you liked what you heard today, you'll probably love what they write. Head on over to tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, discussions, and new release info, and check us out on Google
Release stuff.
They're on tech-gaming.com?
Yes.
There are writings that happen there.
Yes.
There are people who write there.
Did you hear the announcement today?
I did not, no. What's the announcement?
Cision announced us as one of the top 50 consumer electronics blogs.
Woot!
Really? Congratulations. Yes. Damn. That's awesome.
What number we are?
What number? What number?
50.
Hey, we made the top 50.
You know what? It's like the gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal. Gold medal guy's happy because he's there. Bronze medal dude's just happy to be on the podium. Silver medal guy really sucks. So congratulations on being the bronze medal guy.
Thanks. Bringing up the rear. So I'm shooting for at least 45 next year.
Very nice. Very nice. Congratulations.
More tentacles.
Yes, that's exactly what we need. So also check us out on Google Currents, which you can read us without the ads. It's always nice.
Oh, cool.
What are the latest ads in Nashville Blue?
I think I'm still getting harassed by WWE 13 ads.
Really? Right now I got American Airlines, Lee Jeans, and Alaska Airlines. That's about it. I dropped an advertiser because they just weren't paying enough. Today,
I have to say about ads and targeted ads, I get nothing but ads for MechWarrior Online, and I
know you. Wow!
But I already, I'm already playing. I paid my money. Can I just tell them? I bought it. I bought it. Stop showing it to me.
Then read us on Google Currents, and also you can read us on that Twitter thing. I am Robert Allen at tech_gaming. Where can they find you, Jeremy?
I am at the bottom of the list. I am at Jeremy_Lamont.
Just like us.
Number 50.
And I am BlueSwim, BlueSwim. And our missing in action comrades are Sean Nola at Sean Nola. That's two N's. And at Samurage, SamurAge.
Excelente.
Magnifique.
Muy bien.
Tostada. I see a ray of light in my vision. Everything is coming back to keep me driven. I'm taking you down, and you'll stay locked up in this prison. You can find your way to get to me, but you better believe this is how it's gonna be. You think you're clever, you're not so mega. You're just the same as everybody else. And I'm gonna prove in time that no heart's as strong as mine. No way to pierce my skin. There's no flesh and blood here.